Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Employers, simplify your pension scheme with a Zurich Master Trust. Zurich Corporate Pensions. Trust excellence. Visit zurichcorporate.ie.
Tweet at Drive Time RTE.
You're welcome back to the programme. A former Canadian military leader says there are striking similarities between Ireland and Canada when it comes to sexual misconduct in the military. Canada had a series of scandals that saw its top officers in a storm of public scrutiny as a flurry of allegations were levelled against them. Chris Whitecross is a retired Lieutenant General who led the Canadian Forces Strategic Response Team on sexual misconduct in 2015. And Chris Whitecross joins us now on the line. Chris, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you very much indeed for taking our call. You've been looking at the report from the Independent Review Group into the Irish Defence Forces, and you say there are striking similarities between what you found in your own force in Canada and what you've been reading. Tell me more.
Absolutely. So just in terms of historic perspective, in Canada, in the mid-1990s, there were some articles in the Canadian National magazines that basically spoke about sexual misconduct in Canadian Armed Forces, and the Canadian military tried to address the issue at that time, but was unsuccessful. You know, bring it forward a number of years, in 2014, the same sense of articles that came out and a groundswell of concern by both serving and retired members, and it started the process all over again. And how do you address sexual misconduct in a military environment? And so the Canadian military, the Canadian government, actually, back then in 2014, got the services of an ex-Supreme Court Justice, Madame Deschamps, in 2014, and again got an ex-Supreme Court Justice or an ex-Justice, Madame Arbour, in 2019-20, to address the issue is very similar to what you're facing in Ireland.
And were the allegations similar, Chris?
Absolutely. I think it's of no surprise that all, I would say, humbly speaking, that any military that has both men and women in it, all militaries that have men and women in it, are sort of facing to some degree the issues of bullying, sexual harassment, and to the its farthest scope to the right, you know, sexual assault and rape for men and women in that kind of an environment, mm-hmm. because of the way sort of the militaries were brought up. And in many ways, as I spoke to, I think it was your producer earlier, was we didn't really prepare our military forces when they allowed women in their militaries. And I think what we're seeing today is you know, basically a result of not really taking the time and effort in order to be able to address the issues on the onset.
I have a number of questions for you. But one of the questions that we're dealing with here in terms of public discourse at the moment, even today, is for some of the offences that happened or crimes that happened overseas while on camp or while on duty overseas, who has jurisdiction to prosecute and to investigate? It's not the police here, the domestic police. There are questions about the military police or who a victim or a survivor would go to with such a complaint. Did you come across that issue in Canada, and how did you resolve it, if so?
I mean, it's an interesting problem, because, and I can only speak to the Canadian context, but in Canada in the late 70s, sexual misconduct, including rape, was given, the authority was given to the military police in order to address the allegations or the specific allegations and to do the investigations. Now we're seeing that that's probably, well, that's not what's going to happen in the future, that all matters of sexual misconduct are now going to be given to the civilian police because they are far better qualified in order to do the investigations and such. But that led to the question of what do you do when you're on deployment? And when you're on deployment, the expectation is that certainly in the Canadian context, I suspect as much in the Irish context, is that the behavior of our personnel, our men and women in uniform, are to the highest standards that are expected, and the values upheld within our own nation that are also upheld when they're deployed. So the issue right now is who has jurisdiction, and I'm not sure, to be honest, I'm not sure where Canada has fallen on that, but I suspect it will be taken back to Canada.
Okay. What about a statutory or a public inquiry? Did you have one into the controversy in Canada, and how was it run?
So in 2014, Madame Deschamps, an ex-Supreme Court justice, was actually hired to go across Canada and find the ground truth, as it were, for sexual misconduct in the Canadian Armed Forces. And what she determined was that there was a sexualized culture within the military, that if you didn't deal with it at the very start, which is, you know, sexualized language or pornography and all that, then what it led to was more profound and more serious sexual misconduct, right up to a sexual assault and rape.
And can I ask you a quick supplementary? Madame Deschamps' tour and inquiry, was that seen as a statutory inquiry, or was it a scoping exercise, and was that a sole person operation?
So I'm not quite sure of the terminology you're using. It was an inquiry to find out what the issues were outside of. So the military brought someone in from the outside in order to be able to do it. And she determined, she provided 10 recommendations that came out of it that we were to address and that were accepted by Parliament.
Okay. So I should explain maybe my questioning here. The reason I'm asking this about the type of inquiry is that in an Irish context, we have had tribunals of inquiry that have gone on for decades in this country and without resolution or the resolution question in some instances. So we're now discussing what type or form of statutory inquiry should occur, and if it should be in public, and if witnesses could be compelled to give evidence and so on. But I appreciate there could be some differences there. Can I ask you about what you were talking about in terms of a change? Have you found now that in the Canadian military that a change of culture was possible?
Well, I wouldn't say was possible. I'm saying is possible, because certainly the Canadian Armed Forces is not where it needs to be. But there's been a lot of work being done in the last couple of years. I mean, you said it yourself in the introduction. In the 2019-2020 timeframe, there were a number of very senior leaders of the Canadian Armed Forces that were charged or relieved of their duties because of reports that have come up, even for behavior that had happened many years ago. So just, you know, it might sound a little bit counterintuitive, but the fact that people are actually coming forward and saying things is a good thing, because it means that the fear of reprisals and the fear of reporting is finally being addressed. Now, I wouldn't say that it's the panacea, that certainly Canada is at the stage where everything's being addressed and everything's being reported, but at least you're getting those initial steps that are happening. Now, Canada has started two things, I think, very similar to the Irish a couple of years ago. One of them is they have a three-star general whose whole job is to deal with culture change, and she's been tasked with as chief protocol and culture change to really look at the systemic issues and to look at the HR policies and to look at the academia and the and sort of the literature and has brought on a number of people that have experience and expertise in this area to deliver on culture change. And she has a number of lines of effort that she's working on and a very distinguished team that's working on it. But also there is an independent body, an independent person that has been appointed by government to ensure that the Canadian Armed Forces is actually making progress in its culture change, in making progress in both Madame Deschamps and Madame Arbour's 48 recommendations to ensure that we're not dropping the ball, that the Canadian Forces isn't dropping the ball on that. And I think that independence outside of the chain of command, independence outside of the Canadian Forces is really important to make sure that there is a steady drumbeat moving forward and that things are actually being accomplished. And they don't drop the ball like they sort of did back in the 1990s.
Well, I must say it's highly instructive to listen to you speak and to talk to you. It's a great privilege to have you on the programme. Chris Whitecross, retired Lieutenant General in the Canadian Armed Forces. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on Drive Time.
My pleasure and good luck.